The Well is a gospel center church located in Boulder, Colorado. We exist to proclaim the gospel and make disciples. For more information about The Well, please visit us online at www.boulderwell.org.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to The Well. My name is Matt. I am one of the pastors here. Good to be with you guys this morning. We are continuing our series in the book of Proverbs as we cruise through it. We'll be bouncing around a little bit in Proverbs here this morning and a little bit in the New Testament. So if you're new to church or maybe you don't know the Bible that well, don't worry. We'll have the words up on the screen behind me to help you out. If you don't own a Bible and you want one, we would love to give you one. We have some out in the foyer that you can grab one anytime during the service, like, or after the service. Feel free to take one. We'd love for you to own one if you don't already. Maybe this is just me, but does anybody here have a restaurant that you think, and you probably know deep down inside, that you go there too much? Like, and your markers are like, you literally know everybody there, and it's kind of like almost like a weird relationship. Like, they bring you your food before you order it because they know what you're going to get, that kind of thing, right? So I've got one here in town. It's a restaurant called Tiaco. I eat there far too much, because I love tacos and other things that they serve, and I love that place. I walk in and it's just like, it's like home for me. I'm not sponsored this morning by Tiaco, but I would be happy to take their money. Our church needs it, so I don't think that's going to happen. But anyways, when I walk in, this really unique thing happens because I go there too much. The owner, who is a friend of mine, his name's Peter. He will literally yell across the restaurant at times, "The pastor's here," which then causes the whole restaurant to turn and look at me. And he's like, "Yeah, that's him. He's a pastor." And it's real awkward. But I deep down inside kind of love it. It's kind of fun and it's playful. And so they joke that I'm the pastor of Tiaco, which I'll take. It doesn't pay well, but I'll take it. But what inevitably happens after that, and this has happened over 20 times now, I really thought it through, this conversation. I walk in, he yells, "The pastor's here." I sit down at the bar, wherever, like there's a big community table, and I promise I'm not selling Tiaco. But I sit down there, and somebody inevitably go, "Hey man, are you really a pastor?" And I'll be like, "Yeah man." And they'll go, "Huh. You don't look like a pastor." And to my response, I didn't know why pastors had a certain look that we're supposed to carry, but apparently I don't have it, because that almost always gets said, "You don't look like one." I'm like, "Okay." And then like we'll sit there for a minute, you know, that awkward thing, they'll be like, "Hey man," like, and it comes back. I'm like, "Yeah, what's up?" And he's like, "What's it like?" Like, that happens all the time. And it's an interesting question, because the question of what is it like is a deeper question than what do you do, right? If somebody says, "What do? You give them your job description. "These are the things that I do." When somebody says, "What's it like?" then you're kind of stuck. You have to describe the emotional reality of it. And I'm like, "Oh, man." So I've thought a lot about it. I want to give a good answer to these people. And I said, "It's a lot like people." I'm like, "What?" Like, just hang in there. It's like people in the sense that being a pastor, I'm in the people business. But my job is, in essence, is to introduce and teach people about God and then turn them loose to be a light in a dark world. Like, there's more to it than that, but really simply, that's kind of what it's like, is interacting with people. Now, here's what I've learned over coming up on 17 years of doing this now, is this reality, is that people are complex. Right? It would be amazing if we all got together in here, we all sat down, got in a circle, and everybody just told their story. Not a single story in this room would be identical. Not a single one. It would be different. And what I've learned from hearing a lot of stories, because that's a big part of my job, is hearing your story, hearing people's stories and what's going on in their life and praying for them and helping them through difficult times or celebrating with them in great times, right? As I've learned this reality, is that we would probably be shocked to learn what everybody in this room has gone through in their life, right? The highs and the lows and everything in between. It would blow our minds to learn the resilience of being a human being, of what that takes to survive in this world. We experience dark, dark things, and we have great, great moments, and we live everywhere in between that all the time. And so it's an interesting thing to think about, because humanity is dynamic, not static. It's not stationary. It's not like you can't just figure out a person and then that means you know all people, right? It's complex. And it's amazing when you think about it that way, that we all get along, at least for the most part, right? Or that we're all here together. We're willing to do this thing called a church together. It's a beautiful thing. And it's a testament to the grace of God in our own lives. So, what does this have to do with the book of Proverbs that we're studying? Well, it got me thinking this week. The book of Proverbs is a fascinating, fascinating book. If you're not familiar with it, it's a wisdom literature, right? And so it's full of wisdom that God has given to people to write down, and then we can then apply to our lives. I mean, it's really quite simply, that's what it is. But the interesting thing about Proverbs is I find that almost everybody likes it. Almost, right? But they at least like it because it at least speaks to them, which is an interesting thing when you think about how dynamic the human soul is, how complex humanity is, that the book of Proverbs, and I would say the rest of the Bible, but especially for our context today, the book of Proverbs can say something, and it can speak to each and every one of us, given stage of life, season of life, what we're going through, and it can still speak to us, even though it might speak to somebody else in a very different and unique way. And I find that extremely fascinating. And so today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use Proverbs 17, verse 3. As our main point, as the main proverb. And I'll explain it more here in a minute, and we'll bounce around a little bit. But Proverbs 17:3, it says this, "The crucible is for silver, and the furnace is for gold, and the Lord tests hearts." Okay. Now, Proverbs 17, the whole chapter, it's a really interesting chapter because it's different than a lot of the other chapters. A lot of the chapters in Proverbs you read about, it'll deal with stuff like adultery or financial stuff. It kind of has a topic. Chapter 17, if you read it, you're like, what is going on? Because it just jumps from topic to topic to topic. It's line after line of proverb of basically a wisdom saying over and over again. And most commentators, when you look at chapter 17, they'll focus in on verse 3 and say, this is kind of the pinnacle of chapter 17. It kind of gets to the heart of what Proverbs 17 is getting after, right? And what is it saying? Well, it's saying that life is a crucible, right? And that it's hard, and that the Lord is testing us in those things. It's like a furnace, it says. And what's fascinating there is this. It stands out to me. Why? Because it touches on one of the things that we all experience, no matter how different we are. You will face crucibles in life. You will face fiery furnaces in life. Right? Anybody in here ever been through a crucible in life? Anybody? Feel a little lonely? Right? You can raise your hand. It's okay to move in church. Right? Of course you have. You're a human being, right? We all go through them. We all navigate them. And the reality is praise God if you're not in one right now. That's good. But the reality is that you don't know deep down inside. There'll be something else that will happen in your life. Or maybe you're neck deep in it right now. That's the reality of the room that we sit in right here today. Some of us, man, we're in some pain. And some of us aren't. But even when you're not, you're still navigating what happened to you from the pain that you felt before, right? This is part of the human condition. It's a complex thing. This is something we all experience no matter our story or our background. And it's because of that, I think that it's worth our time to ask the question, how do we live in light of that reality? How do we live? How would God call us to live in light of that reality? I think that's a good and fair question. So I was just curious because I actually looked this up on Wikipedia because, you know, that's what you do. I was curious how old, like with the age range for millennials, and apparently I am one. At the very end of it, I'm the oldest millennial you could be. So I'm like the grandfather of millennials, I guess. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. So because I'm a millennial and I have a question, where do you ask questions? Google. You Google it. Did somebody say Ask Jeeves? Get out of here. Bing, right? So I was just curious this week. So I Googled what to do in hard times. Wow. There's not a lot of clarity, I can tell you. But I'll actually give the internet a little bit of props. A lot of what I got, I thought was actually, some of it was pretty darn good. There was some good stuff out there that I think could be helpful. But it's also like sifting through a sea of garbage to find that. And so I want to share some of the things that are different than I think we're going to see God call us to do to handle difficulties and crucibles of life. Hey, I want to share, I can't help myself, I have to share a few of the things that I found in my search, right? Well, one site said this: when facing difficult times, the key is to simply stay positive. I'm like, okay, there's some truth in that, right? But then the author went on, you can remain positive and remind yourself that there really is a light at the end of the tunnel and you'll make it through. Or you can curl up in the fetal position and relegate yourself to being nothing more than a victim of circumstance. A little heavy-handed. and so I'm like, okay, being positive is a good thing, but like one of the things that they don't teach you in seminary when you're going through seminary, and they're getting better at this, is the amount of difficulty you're going to experience in trying to be a pastor and trying to help people. You're just never going to know the amount of hurt that people are navigating. And there's no way, that's not like a knock on seminary, it's just the reality. You don't know what you know until you know it sometimes, right? And one of the realities is I've learned this in ministry, is that when I sit with somebody that's going through something very difficult, one of the worst things I could say in the moment is like, hey, I really need you to stay positive right now, right? Doesn't really work in that moment because you're sad. And that's okay, right? So good attempt, not quite there. Another one. This, they progressively kind of get worse. So I'm just going to warn you. Just change it up. That's what it said. And, after you identify the key takeaways from your difficult time, you just need to make a change. If it's a change you can implement immediately, do it. You don't want to be in the middle of a difficult situation longer than necessary. Well, I don't know about you, but with most of my problems, my crucibles, my furnaces in life, I don't get to go, I'm just going to change it up now. Right? Like, think about that. Like, I'm married. I love my wife to death. We have difficult seasons. I don't look at her and go, I'm just going to change it up. New wife. Some do that. I do not recommend it. Right? Like, that's not a good response. Now, let's get to the really bad ones. The really bad ones. Right? When facing difficulties in life, sometimes the best option is to ice people out of your life. Wow. Goes on to say, this is how you deal with anyone you decide that you just don't want to be around any longer and is no longer part of your journey. Okay, sounds a little selfish, and it is. And here's the deal, I get it. There's times we need to remove relationships from our lives to heal and move on. Like, I get all that, but generally a blanket statement of just ice people out of your life when you're going through a difficult situation is not a good response. And now let's say, I got one more. I know this is taking too long, but I couldn't help myself. I saved the worst for the last. When experiencing difficulty, pain, and suffering, maybe the best option is to go and buy yourself something new. Wow, that's just getting after it. Like, I'm a capitalist and I don't care. Like, consumer to the max, right? Like, that's commitment at least. The article said this. This will turn around any mood, really. But buy yourself something that you know will make you happy and something that will add value to your personal brand and where you are headed. See it as a motivation gift to yourself. You get it. I don't have any other words for it, right? Like that's just, like, honestly, that's actually probably more an indicator that if you're going through a difficult time and you need to go spend money to navigate what you're feeling in your soul, that probably something's off more than a way to fix it. So we can see there's lots of ideas about how to navigate the tensions in life, these difficult seasons, these crucibles, and so on and so forth. And I'm not saying that all these things that I just mentioned are all bad or evil. I'm sure the people wrote it intended good things. But I think there's something deeper, something that God's inviting us into in the midst of difficult seasons. And I think there's real wisdom to be found. So today, no matter if you're a Christian or not, I would propose that it's worthwhile to look at what God has for you when it comes to this. Because I don't really see an answer that handles the longings of your soul when I search the internet. Right? And so I would just invite you into that today. And here's the truth. We all need help. We all do. None of us escape this. These crucibles and furnaces are part of our existence despite our great attempts to remove any pain from our lives that we go through, right? We will spend enormous amounts of money, but a lot of energy to not experience pain. But we still do. And so I think we need to look at this. Look at Proverbs 19, verse 21. It says this: "Many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand." Let me read that one more time, because this is really important. "Many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand." Now, here's what I love about this particular proverb. Solomon, who wrote this book of Proverbs, has just said something really profound. He said something extremely profound. He said, in the midst of the chaos of life, in the midst of all that's happening around us and inside of us, what? The purpose of the Lord will stand. Despite what's going on. Now think about that for a minute. If we actually believe that God has good purposes, and that we believe what Scripture says, that He is working things together for good, and we honestly believe that, and we can look around at the chaos around us, and we can go, the purposes of God are going to stand despite my circumstance or what's going on or what I see on the news or whatever's happening. That does something to us. That actually changes us. I bet social media would look a lot different if everybody believed that. Right? We'd probably be more receptive people, not as reactive. We'd probably be able to be a little bit more calm when things happen. We'd be able to navigate it because we can trust that God has a good plan, and that He is working it out. Now, I get it. That's a hard thing to do in the midst of trials. No doubt about it. But it doesn't negate the truth of the statement. Now, let's engage this a little bit more. Because I think you can take a proverb like that, generally speaking, one of two ways. The first way being, well, that sounds terrible. Right? If the purposes of the Lord are prevailing, yet I'm going through this, then I want nothing to do with that God. You ever been there? You ever heard somebody who's there? I really think it's a fair thing to say, but I think there's more to it than meets the eye. And I wouldn't want that for anybody, because I think there's another way to understand this and to read this, and it's this. Or we can go the other way and find comfort in the reality that there is stability in who God is in spite of what's going on around you. That there's still goodness being worked out despite my trials. C.S. Lewis, you may know him. He's famous for The Chronicles of Narnia, is probably what he's most widely known for. It was made into a movie, several of them recently, kids books. I think they're much more than kids books. They're some of my favorite books. I've read them to all to my kids, and we love them. But C.S. Lewis was a great author, great thinker, and he was well acquainted with the crucibles of life. When he was a young man, very young, his mother died. He fought in World War I, which is mind-blowing in and of itself, the things that you would see in that experience. And then he lived through World War II. He had a regular radio broadcast that he would broadcast to the soldiers. He was too old at that time to fight, but he saw both World Wars. And he married later in life, and 4 years after he was married, his wife died of cancer. So a man well acquainted with grief and sorrow. And because I'm kind of a bit of a C.S. Lewis nerd, and I like his stuff, I've got a book that it's actually just full of letters that he wrote to people. And they're beautiful because he was an incredible writer. And he was an encouraging friend. And he was writing to a friend on September 2nd, 1949, who was going through a great trial in their life. And I want to read to you one line from that letter of what he said to his friend. He said this: "God, who foresaw your tribulation, has specifically and specially armed you to go through it, not without pain, but without stain. Not without pain, but without stain. That's a profound statement. You might be like, what in the world? Not without pain, but without stain? What's he getting at? He's saying, hey, the reality of this world that we live in is that we will experience pain. But because of the work of Jesus and what Jesus has done, the stain of sin has washed us as white as snow. Jesus has washed us white, so we are clean. You are not held captive by that forever. There will be a time in which you will experience the cleanliness from the brokenness of the world, is essentially what he's saying. That will happen either when Jesus returns and restores all things and completes his great and beautiful plan, or when we die and we meet him face to face in heaven if we claim him as God. This is what C.S. Lewis was writing to his friend. You see, God hasn't promised us a painless life. Okay? That's not the gospel message. But the stain of sin has been wiped away by the work of Jesus. Sin and brokenness guarantee that we will feel pain, we will go through furnaces, and we will face crucibles in this life. And in the midst of all of it, though, we can take refuge in Jesus. And I know that might, especially if you've been around church, that might sound cliche to you. But sometimes things are cliche because you need to hear them over and over again and realize that they're actually true. And that they're good. Now, in this, let's just dive in a little bit deeper. So how does God navigate all of this, right? What do we see in this proverb? Proverbs 17:3. Let's read it one more time. It says, the crucible is for silver, and the furnace is for gold, and the Lord tests hearts. Just two quick things about what God does with the crucibles and furnaces in our lives. And the first one is this. He uses them. He uses them to refine us, as it says here in this text. Now let me be really, really, really clear on this point. God does not enjoy your pain. He is not cruel. He does not sit there and go, well, look at that person suffering. Well, they made a bad choice. They're going to sit in their mess and they're going to learn from it. That's not how God operates. That's not how he treats you, and that's not how he loves you. He does not do that at all. I'm a father of three kids, and I can tell you that one of the saddest things is watching your kids hurt and suffer. I hate it. And I've also learned that sometimes it's necessary for them to grow up. I would do anything I could to stop their pain. And sometimes I can't do anything. Now, God's different. This is where the analogy breaks down, right? But the reality is that sometimes that is what's necessary for my child to grow. But I don't enjoy it. I don't like that. That's how God feels about us. He's like, hey, this is a broken world that's tainted with sin. I have done something to provide a way out of it, and at one point, it will be over. But listen, as long as that's there, I'm going to use it and redeem it for something good. And this is what God does. The crucibles and furnaces in your life can be used by God to help you grow. And I get it. If you're neck deep in it right now, that does not sound pleasant. And that's hard. I get it. James chapter 1 in the New Testament, this is the brother of Jesus. He writes this in verse 2, chapter 1. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. Interesting statement, right? For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. He says, count it your joy when you face various trials. James, the brother of Jesus. And you have to understand, when we read the Bible, we have to remember that these were people, yes, inspired by God writing it, but these were real people with real experiences and real pain. This isn't just an ambiguous person that said these words. This is the brother of Jesus who watched his brother be crucified. Right? He was on the run after Jesus was crucified. He experienced enormous amounts of pain, actually to the point where eventually he was martyred, he was killed for being a follower of Jesus. So this isn't a person that is just like, hey, you know, count it all joy when you go through pain, when you face trials. No. He knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's talking about. But why does he say, count it your joy when you face all different kinds of trials? How does he say it? Because he's learned something. It produces steadfastness in us. It produces a resilience in us. Have you ever met somebody, when you hear their story, maybe what they've gone through in life, it just kind of blows your mind that they're still standing there in front of you, and they have like a calm disposition about it, and they kind of have a poise about them that is just kind of mind-blowing? Whenever I meet people like that, I try as gently, but I'm a curious person, but I always want to ask them, what was it like? And almost to a T, these people, when I've asked them this, they say, here's what I learned. I never want to go through that again. And I don't wish it on anybody. But I would not be who I am today without that experience. You see, that's one of the weird things of life. Sometimes we just, do you ever get in these moments where it's like, we don't really have the words to describe what God's done. Those are really hard things to preach, by the way, as a preacher. I'm supposed to use words. But what we see here is that oftentimes people would say, man, I don't ever want to deal with that again. But who I am today, my relationship with God, the love that I have for my neighbor, right? Things like that have been produced out of the trials, out of the crucibles, out of the circumstances, and it's what I needed in my life. It's a fascinating thing. Look at what Peter says about this topic in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while. Again, another person persecuted, eventually martyred, right? Now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Are you beginning to see that the Bible is not surprised with the crucibles in life? There's no like covering it up. It engages it. It expects these things to happen and even views them as tests that we can use to see where our hearts truly are. Now, I know it's kind of the elephant in the room. I haven't really brought it up yet, but the reality is we see this over and over again. That it says that God is using these things as a test in a sense. It's an interesting thing. And I don't know about you, but when I hear that on the surface, I don't like it. I'm like, you don't need a test? Like, I have to go through that so you can know where my faith is? Are you kidding me? Anybody else kind of have that, like, little knot in your stomach when you read that, when you hear those things in there? It's okay. You can be honest. You're in church. It's a bad place to walk. Right? Well, that's actually getting it a little bit wrong. Here's the truth. God knows your heart. He knows your thoughts. He knows you better than you know you. So what's a test for? Well, the test isn't for God, it's for you. It's for you. It's for me. You see, the test that we go through, in a sense, these experiences, what they do is they reveal a lot of times what's going on below the surface in our lives, right? I don't know about you, but I know that when I'm hurting, when I'm broken, when life feels too heavy, when I don't know what to do, when I feel beaten down, I don't seem to have a solution, I tend to be much more honest, raw, and real, especially with God. Right? A lot of times, the truth about who we are deep down inside comes out when we're pressed. That's a hard thing to take in, but it's the truth. You see, so often what we want to do is when the crucibles of life come and we have responses and we're living a certain way and we just go, well, no, I'm just doing this because this is there. I'm like, no, that's there, not because of the situation, but maybe what's going on inside of you in your heart. It's speaking to your relationship with God. It's speaking to your faith. It's speaking to your trust. It's speaking to your relationship with your spouse or your neighbor or your friends or whatever it is. It's an opportunity, in a sense, for you to be honest and see where you are and see what God might want to do in you in that circumstance. See, this is what God does. He takes the thing that seems impossible. How could good come out of this? But he uses it to refine us. Not happy that we have to be refined. Wasn't what he wanted. That was our choice for following sin and brokenness. But even in the midst of that, God in his goodness and his grace goes, no, there's grace for you in that. There's grace for you in that. There's love for you in that. Let's just be honest about what's going on in your soul and what's going on in your heart, and may you know the love that I have for you. In those moments when you're broken down and you find yourself cursing at God in a sense and yelling at him and going through it, and he goes, I get it. And he says, pay attention to that. What's going on inside of you? It's an opportunity. I know the idea of being tested won't sit well with us all the time. But God knows what's in our hearts, and he doesn't need a test to figure it out. The test is our opportunity. So hear me. Remaining steadfast, though, in the midst of a difficult season, as we just read in that First Peter passage, what does it do? It leads to praise, not sorrow. Because nobody wants to stay in a sorrowful state. Right? And it's okay to have sorrow. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to mourn. It's okay to grieve. But listen, you're not meant to stay there. That would be being given over to despair. Okay? You're made, you have the emotional capacity as a gift from God to lament. Okay? Lamenting can be a part of being steadfast. That can be coming to God honestly with the pains and trials and the things in your life and giving them to him and saying, this is what's going on and this is how I feel. That's a marker of being steadfast before the Lord. But look, if we're doing it, what First Peter says here is it says, what will it result in? It will ultimately result in praise. Why it will result in praise? Because it will have to eventually return onto Jesus and the work that he's done. And then it talks about right in there the future hope that we have in Jesus' return and his final establishment of the new heavens, new earth, where he will come back, where he will rule and reign. And that's where we get the passages where he will wipe every tear from every eye. There will be no more sickness. There will be no more death. There will be no more suffering. In that moment, those are the moments when we would, as a people, cry out, oh, death, where is your sting? Arrogantly, boastfully, because it's in Jesus. Peter can say what he just said because he keeps his hope in that future. And that God is making all things new. So the key to having this mindset, this steadfastness, is allowing yourself to lament, but also fixing our eyes on eternity, a hopeful future as well. That's way better than just positive thinking, right? It is positive thinking in a way, but it's thinking about the right thing. What we focus in on does matter. The second thing, and this is kind of stealing from that C.S. Lewis quote, not kind of, it is straight up stealing it. When we think about how does God navigate this stuff, these crucibles, these furnaces in life, is though we experience pain in Christ leaves no stain. There is no stain. John 16:33 might be one of the most powerful statements that Jesus ever made. This is Jesus speaking. Now listen to what he says. I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world, listen, you will have tribulation. No doubt about it. Jesus said it. He doesn't lie. But take heart, I have overcome the world. Isn't that fascinating? That sequence, you will face tribulation. Take heart, I have overcome the world. Jesus has overcome the world. Yes, we feel the effects of brokenness here and now. Yes, it hurts. But remember, Jesus Christ came, right? He was crucified. He felt the effects of all of the brokenness of the world, right? This is something we must understand about the work of Jesus Christ on the cross. He didn't just go to the cross generically. He went there particularly for all of our sins. For all of our brokenness, sins that you've committed and things that have been committed against you. He went to the cross for the brokenness of the world, things that you can't even control. And he felt the weight of all of that on himself. And he took that and bore it in his body. And he died for our sake and for his glory. He did it so that you and I wouldn't have. So that we could have the hope that one day all of this brokenness would cease. And so if you find yourself doubting whether God loves you or not because of what you're going through, remember what Jesus has done for you particularly, not generically. Remember what he has done. And remember that no one, listen to me, no one can take that away. No crucible, no furnace, nothing can take that away from you. No sickness and not even death can take that from you. Romans 8:35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? And it goes on. And later it says, by no means. No way. We are more than conquerors, is what it says. Nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. The crucibles of life are difficult, but the hope that God gives us is sufficient. It is sufficient. It is enough. Yes, the crucibles and furnaces in life are really hard. Yes, the reality is that our faith is tested and that can be confusing. But God, through his Son, Jesus, has given us all we need to remain steadfast. You have been given all that you need in Jesus. Now, our hope is secure in him. Because? Why? He went through the greatest trial. He went through the greatest furnace. He went through the greatest crucible. And guess what? It was death. And 3 days later, he walked out of his grave. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is where our hope is. He has defeated the fiery furnaces. The resurrection shows us our future reality. That's where we can find hope. That's where we can rest. In times that seem like it's so chaotic, we can't rest. We fix our minds and we turn our hearts to the reality of the resurrection. So, yeah, we're all different, no doubt about it. Different stories. We all have our own wounds. We all have our own losses. We all have our own victories. But in a weird way, it kind of unites us. Because we're all different. But the reality is that we all need help. Because of that, listen, we've all experienced Proverbs 17:3. The crucible is for silver, and the furnace is for gold, and the Lord tests hearts. That's our experience. We've all gone through this, and we will again. But remember, no matter where you are, God has not left you alone in your trials. He is with you. And may you remember the wonderful words that C.S. Lewis wrote to his friend in 1942. God, who foresaw your tribulation, has specially armed you to go through it, not without pain, but without stain. Let's pray.
Thank you for listening to the Well podcast. For resources and information on how you can support our mission to proclaim the gospel and make disciples, please visit us online at www.boulderwell.org.